Welcome to It's No Secret, a podcast for Kiwis who want their money questions answered.
Ready, steady, go.
This podcast will answer the money questions you may or may not have on your mind. We'll talk to real Kiwis and share truths about our own financial lives.
Both the successes and the failures. Because the truth is, there is no secret to achieving financial freedom.
Hello and welcome to It's No Secret. I'm Christine.
And I'm Kat.
And today on the podcast, we are chatting about the 101 of emergency funds. Now, this is going to be a nice quick episode because...
Recap. We've talked about it before.
Yep. It's been mentioned multiple times.
But this is your annual reminder.
Exactly. And if you're new to the podcast, welcome. We're talking about it today. Okay. So we've got a lineup of questions and we'll just pump through them. Kat.
Perfect.
Number one, what is an emergency fund? And are there other names for this thing?
I mean, there definitely are. I feel like the... what do they call it in your
contingency?
The barefoot investor has a whole bucket. Name for it. I don't even know. It's got a whole thing like smile or something. I think it's maybe not that. That's like the fund.
I don't think you smile when you're emergency.
Okay, no, something else. Anyway, emergency fund is pretty much what it does is kind of what it says, right? Yeah. It's a pool of money. Maybe fund is misleading, but like an account, let's say an emergency account. So yeah. An account of ideally quite liquid money or easily accessible money that you could use in a situation that has caught you off guard or is an emergency. Yeah. And I feel like the next common question that people throw out is like, well, what deems an emergency?
Yes.
When can I use this money?
Shopping.
Yeah, no. It's not like extra fun on the weekend fund kind of thing. It's things that are, I guess, I mean, obviously actual emergencies, i.e. you have had an unexpected like medical event happen and you need time off work and therefore you need to have, I don't know, some extra unpaid leave, for example, because you don't have enough sick leave. And so you therefore have like a little bit less pay in a month. That would be a really easy example of a genuine medical emergency that could cost you money. The other thing though, just could be a situation that's caught you off guard, i.e. you have a family member that's overseas that's unwell and you either want to visit them or they want to visit you and you decide that you need to, you know, buy $3,000 flights internationally that would usually cost you $1,000. But because you've done it the last minute, some people would categorize that as like an emergency unexpected expense. So, you know, there's lots of things, but it's not like emergency discretionary.
Emergency dress to buy.
Oh my God, I've had a last minute invitation to a wedding and I need to look fabulous. No. That's not what this one is. Exactly. So in an ideal world, we're not really using it because we don't want to be going through situations that would be deemed an emergency too often. But it's that money there that's like just to kind of keep you safe for a rainy day. Rainy day fund. That's what it could be called.
Okay, there you go. Yeah.
Rainy day fund makes it sound a little bit more flexible though, I reckon. Like,
oh, it's like if and when you need it.
Rainy day, I feel like could be as opposed to emergency is more like, no.
Ambulance sirens.
Yes. You've exhausted all our other options.
Yeah. Okay. Love it. Now this next question, and this is more, I was thinking, okay, what do we want to talk about on the podcast today? And I was like, you know what? We talk about, there's a lot of theories that you can talk about. And I think emergency funds, a lot of people think, oh yeah, no, I need one, but do I actually need one? You know, like it's just this, it's kind of like insurance.
Yeah.
You know, like it's like the buffer that you pay for, but then you'll be thankful when you have it. But then you really hate yourself when you don't, you know?
Exactly.
So that's my question. Do I, in italicize, really need one?
Well, I can't tell you what to do. So, I mean, it really is up to you. Exactly. I think, you know, put yourself in the situation of thinking through, okay, let's play out a worst case scenario that could happen in my life. What would that look like? And what would it look like if I didn't have money to fund getting out of that worst case scenario? So I'm going to just pretend to be Christine and play out a scenario for you. Yeah. So let's say...
Well, you can talk about a real life example.
Well, let's say you and Ollie are planning a holiday and you do all the right things, you've saved up for the holiday, you go and get travel insurance and you then go on said holiday and like a week into said holiday, one of you breaks your arm, right? And you need to go to whatever overseas hospital there is and get medical treatment and you perhaps need to like delay your stay or make a few changes to your holiday. For you, that would be an emergency.
Yeah.
And yes, you have travel insurance that would like eventually pay that out. But as some people will know, travel insurance isn't instantaneous. It's not like they just hand you a credit card and then you can be on your merry way.
Yeah.
Most people need to be able to front up the shortfall and, you know, then claim the money back. And so I think that's a really perfect example of where you could actually see a emergency fund being needed.
Yeah, nice.
Similar thing, you know, if it happened here, like, going to throw Tim in the spotlight. I know he went to the dentist trying to be a really hashtag healthy boy the other day and came back and was like, oh no, this is now going to be an expensive visit.
Yeah.
And I said to Tim, I was like, well, Tim, is this going to come out of your emergency fund? And he was like, probably. And that I can also see because I'm like, you know, your checkup costs probably should just be factored into your annual budget.
Yeah.
But let's say you have a checkup and you're not aware that you need like a root canal or a fairly significant filling that's going to cost you in the hundreds or like low thousands of dollars, that would be a valid reason to use an emergency fund.
Yep.
You're not budgeting to have a root canal every year.
No, I mean, hopefully not. Don't eat sugar, kids.
So like shout out to Tim for doing the right thing and looking after his health and also having an actual emergency fund to get himself out of this pickle. Because I guess the downside is if you don't, it's like then what do you have to do? You need to rely on short-term forms of debt if you can get them, you know, and that's not to say like even if Tim had a credit card right now, like maybe it's not enough to cover that expense. Yep. Maybe he doesn't have a credit card and then he needs to try and get a credit card, like those types of things really tricky to play out in the moment, whereas having cash in your bank account
is a no-brainer.
It's just there, it's available.
Yeah, love it. So I'm keen to hear a real life example when you've used your emergency fund.
Oh, great example.
I've got so many on the top of my head as to what we've talked about.
I was like, tell me what emergencies I've had.
Car blowing up.
Yeah, car. I mean, obviously, cat needing a very expensive like vet visit or surgery from a vet before we actually did have pet insurance. Car blowing up. Luke losing his job for a period of time, kind of unexpectedly for medical expenses.
Mm.
Both of us having more expensive, I guess, medical treatments through the private health system that even though we had health insurance cover at that point in time, it wasn't like max level cover. So we still had to make a contribution. And one of them I can speak to specifically was Luke had a procedure done on his ear because he was off work. Because of his ear, to get back to work, he needed that fixed. He was on unpaid leave from work. Mm. We didn't therefore have the time for him to wait for the public health system because he'd be on unpaid leave. And so your only option there is to like pay money to get yourself out of a situation that's costing money.
Mm.
And so that was a situation of like, well, perfect reason to use an emergency fund to just get quickly into a specialist and resolve the issue.
Yeah.
So that type of stuff.
So the one that was in my head was it wasn't recently, it was a few years ago, but I had planned my big OE and I had bought flights to Nepal and got to the airport and found out that I didn't write my name correctly on the flight. So I couldn't take the ticket on the spot and I had already sold all my stuff, made all the plans. And so I obviously had to buy another ticket on the spot, So, I mean, I don't know if that's an emergency or just a stupidity, probably the latter, but at the same time, it required me to use like contingency funds, right?
Exactly.
For a goal that I had.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's kind of, I think, emergencies could be big or small. And the tricky part is like, I think a lot of people approach, even myself, like emergency funds on the small end. So I'm sure we're going to get to it, but it's a question of like, how much should we have in there? And like, I know right now, Luke and I have like 10 grand in our emergency fund.
Each together. Yeah.
Which is pretty low for us because I'm also like, okay, if we were to have a genuine emergency, like a big deal, proper emergency, i.e. one of us was like significantly unwell and had to take a very long period of time off work, that kind of emergency, that would not cut it. Like $10,000 is basically going out in 1 month's mortgage repayment. Yeah. Good luck to you. You know, that kind of thing. So I think there's obviously a scale of like if people started erring on the side of covering so much for every worst case scenario, you wouldn't ever have anything outside of an emergency fund because all your savings would just be an emergency fund.
Yeah.
So it's like you need to think about it is trying to just cover, I guess, those short-term contingency, catching you unawares type situations. And then you do still want to have other things in your life, whether it be insurance or self-insurance or other buffers to help you get through like more significant life hurdles.
Yeah. Yeah, nice. And for anyone also wanting to know how much Ollie and I have an hour, so we obviously do not have a mortgage. We don't have kids. We're two, like just a couple really. That's it.
Yeah.
I think I have about $8,000-ish and then he kind of has the same. So together roughly 15 to 16 grand, which I mean,
I would say that's reasonable. That's pretty, I was going to say you need fine. At least 10. So yeah, I am all about that. Luke yeah, and together mine is very low at the fine. Moment. Yeah. I think we're just, that we've been dipping in. I know. But we do have other money sitting in a cash savings account well, yeah. that we've talked yeah. about. So I'm not stressed about it because yeah. it's kind of like
you have
within
access.
My mind, yeah. I have yeah segmented out. But at the moment, we have $10,000 just sitting in our basically bank account with immediate access. And then there's some other money that we could easily access within like 2 to 3 days.
Yeah, nice. But I mean, literature tells us that the kind of standard literature. Is what?
Tell me. Yeah. Tell me more.
I.e. blogs.
Okay. Yeah, is, that we've probably written.
Yeah, pretty much. Is roughly 3 to 6 months income or covering yes. your income or yes. you can do it in dollar amounts. Is that correct? Like yeah. 5, yeah. 10, Expense. 15.
Yeah. True. Yeah. 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 So I think like the standard rule of thumb on the amount is, yeah, you'd often hear like if you don't have an emergency account, just start with $1,000. That's a really good thing to kind of work towards as your first target. Yeah. And then you often hear like $5,000 for an individual or $10,000 for a couple kind of thrown out there. I would say on the couple, you probably need to add some to that if you have children because you're not really just a couple. You're, you know, then a household.
Times two.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And then at some point, depending on your life stage and where you're at and how complicated your financial situation is, you then sort of flip from, I would say, like the rule of thumb mentality to actually covering a set amount of expenses on a monthly basis. And that's where you start to hear people working towards like 3 months or sometimes as conservative as 6 months.
Yeah.
And that would be, you know, on the basis of, let's say I was to be unwell and couldn't work and I didn't have any insurances, like personal insurances that kicked in to help cover my income, how much of a shortfall would our household have from me not working and how much would we need to cover of that, i.e. like 3 months is a common one for people because if you have something like income protection cover that does kick in at a certain point of you being off work, usually there's a stand down period and it can be like the kind of general one is like 3 months or 90 days before that kicks in. So
yeah, right.
That's kind of where I guess the like months worth of expenses or months worth of income comes from is you're trying to cover a shortfall until such time that if this was a sustained loss of income, you would then have another like personal insurance kick in to help you cover that income.
Yeah.
But yeah, it obviously, you know, like if you play out also some worst case scenarios, there are tons of upfront expenses that could be more than 3 months worth of income if you were to have a significant like healthcare event or health event happen.
Yeah, yeah. Nice. That kind of answers my next question, which was like around the insurance piece of I think it's very easy to fall into the trap of, oh, I have insurance, then I don't need an emergency fund because you think that you're covered, but there is usually like a stopgap that's needed to get you through to that.
Well, even
time.
If you think about health insurance, you know, like to if you have all the trimmings and extras of like private health insurance, you still have to go through their preferred providers and get it approved like pre something happening for that to be covered up front.
Yeah.
If not, many people have a gap payment. So how are you funding that gap payment? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that gap payment might only be $100 if you're having a specialist appointment, but what if you're having like an operation and that cost of that operation is $20,000, you know, your gap payment might be like $5,000. Yeah. So there's that. And then there is also, well, if you have something like trauma protection or income protection or even like mortgage protection that some people have in lieu of, say, income protection, there will always be some kind of stand down time where you basically have to not be like working for a period of time. And so I know for me in my income protection, I'm pretty sure it's actually quite short. I think it's only a month. Whereas for Luke, it's 2 years because of the type of work that he has. That's the stand down period. So that's we would have to find if we were solely reliant on having his income to maintain our household and he genuinely couldn't work and we knew he wouldn't be paid his insurance for 2 years, we would have to figure out a way to fund our household bills for 2 years.
Yeah. Yes, that's a quite a long time.
It is. Yeah.
Interesting. Did not know that. Learn something new every day.
And that I would say that it is something to think about if you are getting insurance as well because it can be job specific. So that's why it's 2 years for Luke.
Oh, he's a pilot for those new listeners. Yes. Of the pod.
All these new listeners. Yeah. Hello, welcome.
You're welcome.
Christine just sending out the good vibes. Yeah. All the new listeners
Tell
are coming
friends.
This week.
We like Google reviews.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Okay. Revolving credit. Can this be considered an emergency fund?
I mean, I'd say it can, depending on how you kind of use it. A lot of people do like to use a revolving credit as emergency fund. Mm-hmm. The challenge with that is that, of course, whilst money is sitting in your revolving credit, it's not costing you anything, i.e. you're not paying any interest on that. Yep. But, of course, the minute you withdraw it, you would start to incur interest repayments on the amount that's been withdrawn.
Yeah.
So I would say, you know, people would be more keen on that idea 3 years ago when the cost of doing that was like 2%, but when the cost of doing that is closer to 7-8%, you're perhaps a little bit more conservative about that.
Yeah.
One thing that I would say, though, in line with that, that's potentially a better option is having an offset facility so that you are genuinely, like, particularly if you are building up your emergency fund and you kind of want to grow that, you could have an offset facility set against a smaller portion of your loan if you had a home loan, and add the money in that way. And then, of course, that's just coming straight out. Your interest repayments are essentially, it's kind of a long story short, but being calculated differently. So you're not as penalized. It's not as much lending, if that makes sense.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Kind of, yeah.
We'll, I mean, I would, I'd say the safest thing for most people is to still have it in a separate, like, savings account.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Because then you also have slightly better tracking. Like, people often with revolving credit facilities or offset facilities will typically use those facilities as their general expense account.
Yeah.
And our always, you know, rule of thumb is, like, you don't want to have your emergency funds sitting in your same day-to-day transactional account that your pay and is coming into and bills are going out of.
Yeah. Yes, love it. Perfect segue into the next question, which is, I mean, where should I keep it, really? And then, like, choosing between the different options, because there's, you know, your everyday banking, and then there's a term deposit, and then there's a notice saver, which is you have to give 34 days notice, and then there's a cash fund, and it's like,
where do I put it? I know. I mean, I think some of it is comfort level, but it also has to be, like, think about your personal situation in the sense of how quickly would you need to access that money. And if that's your only source of money to access, then it kind of narrows down your options, because you need to access it hypothetically within a day, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, some people feel quite comfortable having their emergency fund in, say, a cash fund that has, like, 2 to 3 days access point, because they also have a credit card, and therefore they're like, well, if I had a, you know, immediate expense that was $5,000, I would just put that onto my credit card knowing I could access this money in 3 days and then pay that off. Now, that would work for some people. Other people don't like to have credit card facilities. But then, of course, they would need the ability to literally instantaneously transfer that money from a savings account into their transactional so they can pay for something.
Yeah.
There's that. So, yeah, that's why I think it's kind of horses for courses. And to the earlier point I said of, like, right now there's, you know, $10,000 in our cash account with Westpac that Luke and I can see, but then there's, like, tens of thousands of dollars in another investment account that we could get out within sort of, like, 3 days.
Yeah, nice.
Should we need more than $10,000 for an emergency?
Yeah, nice.
Or for a sustained emergency.
Yeah. I also have mine split across my ASB account and then the cash fund, because I am hopefully anticipating that my emergency won't be more than $5,000, and then the rest is it.
Yeah. And I think some, that's, like, also potentially a good approach if you don't like the idea of having a large sum of cash for you just, like, sitting there burning a hole in your pocket in easy, like, look and access on your online banking. You know, leaving enough there so that if you did have find yourself in a situation that you needed to resolve within sort of 24 hours, you could do that, but then also you have ability to, like, draw on these other funds.
I'm keen to also quickly talk on the psychology of that, because every time I log into my bank, I see that lump sum of money and I'm like, I'm not tempted to dip into it, but I think there's something around, like, seeing just a large sum and being like, okay, I am fine. Like, I'm okay. Do you know what I mean?
As I know exactly what you mean. You know? Because right now we dip into ours all the time and there is nothing that keeps me up more at night than logging into Westpac to, like, I don't know, check a direct debit or something and then being like, ooh, like, it just kills me more. So I don't even, I don't even register the debt. Like, I don't even register our home loan, but I do register the minute that that balance is, like, less than 10,000 flat. Like, I think at the moment it's like $9,306 and, like, why do I know that? I should know that. That's
0.999.
Exactly. Yeah. But it is certainly motivating to either, like, make us feel like we need to kind of get our like ducks in a row. Yeah. And to your point, the positive motivation is obviously better of having just that like security blanket of feeling like, okay, there is money there.
Yeah.
Should I need it? This is a good thing.
Yeah, definitely. So on that note, tips for maintaining or rebuilding an emergency fund.
Great idea.
Do we have any?
So figure out how much you need. That's the first step.
Yes, great.
Figure out where you are best to keep it, i.e. are you going to dip into it like Luke and I do and therefore feel bad about it? And should you separate some out into a different account that's a bit harder for you to access?
Yeah.
If you are then rebuilding, make sure you actually put an automatic payment ahead, like in place, basically, and ahead of probably your other goals. So we would always say, generally speaking, if you're rebuilding your emergency account, this is a reasonable way to then pause on, say, regular investing or doing other things with your money so that you can rebuild your emergency account. Because that needs to kind of happen, because again, like, emergencies could happen in quick succession. Yeah. It's like when it rains, it pours kind of thing.
Yeah,
so
don't
just sit on it, you know.
And not do it.
Yeah.
What about like weighing that up against paying off consumer debt?
Well, that's a really good point. I think, you know, we would always say you want to find a balance of that. You obviously would at some point want to prioritize repaying consumer debt, but you'd also want to have some money set aside for an emergency so you're not then further reliant on consumer debt. So if you're starting from scratch and trying to, like, you know, repay debt and build an emergency fund, try and do both for perhaps, you know, a period of time until you get the emergency fund to $1,000. And then beyond that, focus on the consumer debt and then go back to, okay, well, I've met the threshold of $1,000. Am I now working to like $5,000 in cash?
Cool. Yeah. Love it. Yep. Love it.
Yeah.
Great.
So just get started.
Yes. When figuring out the amount, and we've talked about going through your expenses, is it literally going through your bank statements for the last 3 months and being like, hey,
pretty
this
much.
Is roughly.
Pretty much.
And is it like, you know, because I might look at that and be like, hey, I bought a coffee, you know, hear that. That is not an emergency, you know, it's your baseline,
yes,
right?
It's your baseline. Yeah, it's your baseline stuff. Yeah. So it pretty much is like if you, go into your online banking, try and get an export out of like 3 months. Have a look at all the expenses that come out typically by direct debit is the easiest way first, because that's all your automated stuff, with like your bills and other things that
rent
you're paying, rent, mortgage, whatever that is. Also, you can probably get a sense of like, okay, if I'm paid fortnightly and I know that the day before I get paid, I generally speaking have like $100 in my account, you know that you're probably running pretty close to like paycheck to paycheck. And so that would give you just a real easy indication that you need to have your whole paycheck as an emergency fund to cover you for 1 month, right? Without even having to like tally up. If though within your pay, you're sending off, you know, $250 a fortnight for savings and investing, you could remove that because you're not going to do that in an emergency. That would be fair and reasonable to stop that.
Yep.
And then let's say, I don't know, you're also spending like $150 in a month on going out to a nice restaurant, you also probably wouldn't do that in the emergency. So to your point, it's like if you kind of know how much you are spending of your like fortnightly or monthly paycheck, take out those things that are kind of discretionary fun that would genuinely stop in an emergency, and then cover the remaining base expenses.
Nice. Yep. Love it. Great reminder. I'm definitely going to be sitting down to do that and check in.
Literally check in. Well, I mean, look.
It's a good like reality.
I had to do this the other day because we're going through a like restructure of some of our debts, and they make you do a whole reapplication and you have to do all of your incomings and expenses. And I was like, holy. We'll just leave it at that.
We're going to do a Mighty Moments episode because I want to hear about that.
We'll, we'll just shout out to the poor people paying mortgages at like 8% at the moment. It's not fun.
Oh, right.
So, anyway, with that fun note,
thanks
for listening,
everyone.
Prep yourself for an emergency. A time like the present.
Exactly.
If you have any questions, hit us up on the gram at It's No Secret NZ. And we will be back next week with some more money tips.
Until then, we will say see you later.
Bye.
Bye.